Welcome to the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160 with your host, Dr. Bob Hedaya. Sit back, relax, listen, and learn about a unique approach to mental health. And now, here is your host of the Whole Psychiatry Hour, Dr. Bob Hedaya.
Welcome, folks. It's my pleasure to be with you this morning. I'm Dr. Bob Hedaya, your host of the Whole Psychiatry Hour. We're here every Sunday at 11 a.m. That's 1160 at 11, during which time you're going to learn about the many facets of life that affect our mental health. During today's Whole Psychiatry Hour, we're going to explore a novel treatment approach to a condition called borderline personality disorder. People with this disorder may be the most difficult people in your life. And today, you can learn to understand them and how they can be helped when we speak with our guest, Dr. Marcia Linehan. But first, for those of you who are listening for the very first time, I'd like to introduce myself and the whole psychiatry concept. I am a board-certified psychiatrist in adult and adolescent psychiatry. I'm also a psychopharmacologist and founder of the National Center for Whole Psychiatry in Clinical Practice in Chevy Chase, Maryland. I'm the author of a couple of books, and I am also a clinical professor of psychiatry at Georgetown University, where I train physicians in psychoendocrinology, the study looking at the interaction between the brain and hormones. I am a practitioner of functional medicine, a discipline which works and focuses on correcting metabolic processes in the body. So, whole psychiatry is an approach to psychiatric problems that tries to look out of the box. As I often say, in whole psychiatry, we shrink outside the box. And I feel this is needed because response rates using conventional treatments alone, they're better than they used to be, but at best, we might fully help about a third of the people. So we really need to look at the interaction between the mind and the body. We need to look at the immune system, hormones, genetics, lifestyle, spirituality, the places we live in, the spaces we live in, environmental toxins, culture, politics, really all levels of society and existence. In keeping with this whole psychiatry concept and our topic today, which is we're going to look at the borderline personality disorder, I came across an article that comes from a very well-respected journal, the Archives of General Psychiatry, the December 05 issue. And the title of this article is, quote, Hostile Marital Interactions, Pro-Inflammatory Cytokine Production, and Wound Healing. That's a mouthful. This is basically a study that asked a question, how does marital hostility affect the immune system? And what they did is they used wound healing as a marker, and they also looked at the hormones of the immune system called cytokines. As an introduction to their study in their paper, the authors pointed out that a turbulent marriage raises the risk for depression 10-fold to 25-fold. That's huge. In female patients undergoing hemodialysis, women particularly who have kidney problems, severe kidney problems, there's a 46% increase in death risk in high conflict marriages. And if you have high blood pressure and a poor marriage, just talking about your marriage will increase your blood pressure. If you're a newlywed couple and you have a turbulent marriage, your levels of adrenaline increase after a simple discussion about your conflicts, and markers of your immune function actually decrease. In the study that I'm referencing, couples who demonstrated consistently higher levels of hostile behavior, such as disgust or contempt or belligerence, or even talking in threatening tones, these couples healed their physical wounds at only 60% of the normal rate of low hostility couples. So this points out that the quality of the relationships that we are engaged in can have a profound effect on the quality of our lives and our health. Now, according to the American Psychiatric Association's diagnostic manual, people with borderline personality disorder are people who are often described as difficult, very hostile, very angry. They're often unstable in their relationships. They have very intense emotional instability in response to what might appear on the surface to be very minor situations. They're often unusually manipulative, and often they abuse drugs. They might engage in self-destructive behavior. They might hurt their body. They might actually threaten suicide. And people with borderline personality disorder often think in black and white terms. Very hard for them to see the grays in life and to tolerate the ambiguity and the uncertainty without becoming overwhelmed. In your life, this might look like a friend or relative who's often or always in emotional turmoil or crisis, someone who abuses alcohol or drugs, and someone who you might have come to distrust or you might feel like you're walking on eggshells with. Maybe you've wanted to separate yourself from this person and they from you, but in the end, these people suffer from intense abandonment fears, and they usually do not separate easily. These people are often described as very difficult, and their emotional instability and impulsive self-destructive behaviors can and do ripple throughout their social network, affecting the well-being and health of the people connected to them. In many psychiatric circles, people with borderline personality disorder are often maligned. They're misunderstood in a very serious manner, and their therapists often become angry and frustrated. Why does all of this intensity surround these people, and can they be helped? What can you do if you're involved with someone who's suffering from this disorder? With us today to answer these questions is Marcia Linehan, PhD, a professor of psychology and a director of the Behavioral Research and Therapy Clinics at the University of Washington in Seattle. Dr. Linehan has received numerous awards recognizing her clinical and research contributions, including the Lewis I. Dublin Award for Lifetime Achievement in the Field of Suicide and the Distinguished Scientist Award from the Society for Science of Clinical Psychology, American Psychological Association, as well as other awards for distinguished research in suicide, contributions to practice of psychology, and many more. Finally, Dr. Linehan is the originator of a specific type of therapy for people suffering from borderline personality disorder, a therapy called dialectical behavior therapy, or DBT. Dr. Linehan, it's great to have you here. We're going to come back and talk with you about DBT, and we're going to answer many of the questions that people who are engaged with borderline personality actually experience, and the trauma, the difficulty, and the frustration. We'll be back with Dr. Marcia Linehan on the Whole Psychiatry Hour, 1160 WMET.
If getting life insurance is on your things to do list, now you can get a term life policy in just 10 minutes. 10 minutes to get up to $150,000 of term life insurance if you qualify through Jefferson National Life Insurance Company. Call now for a free quote, 1-866-612-3600. With Jefferson National, there's no medical exam, no long forms, and no agent will visit you. Just complete a short application over the phone. If you qualify, your coverage starts right away. That's instant term life coverage in one simple call. Call Jefferson National at 1-866-612-3600. Getting life insurance has never been easier to cross off your list. Contains limitations. Based in Dallas, Texas, Jefferson National issues term life under form number JNLSEL03 or a state variation. Call Jefferson National now. 1-866-612-3600. That's 1-866-612-3600.
Attention men and women suffering from hair loss. Now, with Avacor, a world leader in hair regrowth, you don't have to be bald, even if you have a family history of hair loss. Here's Dr. Mark Goodman, board-certified dermatologist.
The main reason for thinning hair and baldness is hereditary hair loss. Just because there is a family history of hair loss doesn't mean you have to suffer. Avacor is specially formulated to reverse hereditary hair loss and regrow new healthy hair. Our formula targets the hair follicle to effectively stop hair loss and stimulate new hair growth. Before you consider expensive transplant surgery, remember, Avacor is FDA approved to regrow new healthy hair for men and women.
We're giving away a free month of Avacor with all of today's orders. Call 800-449-8917. That's 800-449-8917. Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. Call 800-449-8917. That's 800-449-8917.
AM 1160, WMET presents George Washington University men's basketball. The defending Atlantic 10 Conference champions are back for another exciting season. The Colonials are in their fifth year on WMET, which is the same time Carl Hobbs has been coaching at Foggy Bottom. Experience and talent will be a major part of this year's team. A senior front line returns led by NBA prospect Pops Mensavansu. The 6'9 London native will be counted on to make spectacular plays, including his trademark dunk. Mike Hall brings a steady hand to the Colonials. The 6'8 forward from Chicago has led the team in rebounding three straight years. Philadelphia's Omar Williams is the other senior forward and brings versatility to the offense. The backcourt will be a pair of juniors, Carl Elliott and J.R. Pinnock, who will go by his real first name, Danilo. Pinnock was the best sixth man in the A-10 last season. Excitement is high. The expectations are even higher. Listen to George Washington University men's basketball all season long on AM 1160 WMET.
You're tuned to the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160. Here once again is your host, Dr. Bob Hedaya.
Welcome back to the Whole Psychiatry Hour at WMET 1160 and WMET1160.com. I'm your host, Bob Hedaya, MD. We're talking, or about to talk, with Marsha Linehan, PhD, about the treatment of people who have been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. And these are people who have been stigmatized, really, by the mental health care system. Dr. Linehan has a unique approach that combines both Eastern philosophy with more modern cognitive behavioral therapeutic approaches. Dr. Linehan, it's great to have you on the show. Can you describe for listeners how you would define borderline personality disorder?
Sure, and I want to thank you for having me on the show also. Borderline personality disorder is, at its core, a disorder of pervasive emotion dysregulation. And what that means is it's a disorder where people, despite their very best efforts, cannot regulate or control negative emotions. They can't control how they feel. They can't control how they think when they're highly emotional. And they often can't control emotional actions. Across most negative emotions, such as anger, sadness, fear, disgust, envy, jealousy, sort of across the board, and also often cannot regulate positive emotions. So they can fall in love extremely quickly, grab onto someone, want to be with them one day, hate them the next day. Mm-hmm. They can love something one day, dislike it the next day. They can be very interested in something and then suddenly not be interested in it. And so it's a group of people where, across the board, the disorder has its core in the emotions, but then there's major effects so that a person has trouble with interpersonal relationships because it's very difficult to have an interpersonal relationship if you hate a person one day and love them the next. A person has lots of trouble with a sense of identity, who they are, because you can't have a sense of identity if you never know what you like or what you don't like because it changes all the time. They have a lot of trouble with impulsive behavior because impulsive behavior is very tightly linked to emotions. So you have people who might have a lot of trouble with drugs or spending or sex. You have people often mainly because of the misery and pain in their lives that feel to them uncontrollable, want to kill themselves, want to be dead, and they often do attempt suicide. In fact, we can talk about this perhaps later, have a very high rate of actually ending up dead by suicide. And so you sort of have across the board a whole cascade of problems, all of which kind of link back to this sort of core disorder in the emotion system.
Now, do you believe that this dysregulation is inherited or learned at a young age?
I think the following. I think that the emotion system in people has a heritage component. Everybody's a kind of emotionality itself has a part of it that's inherited. And people who meet criteria for borderline are the group who tended to inherit a highly emotional system. However, you could be highly emotional and not borderline personality disorder. I mean, if you really think about it, there's almost nothing that's ever been done in history that's important that got done without intense emotion. So being highly emotional is not itself such a problem. It's that if you're highly emotional and you happen to be reared or have experiences in your environment such that you didn't learn the capacity to regulate. And highly emotional people need a different learning history. So it's you're not like everybody else. But either a combination of not learning how to regulate or traumas in childhood, which made the whole situation worse. So it's really a combination of biology, not just genetics, because you know what happens in the uterus has a big effect too. So you've got genetics, you've got the uterus, you've got early childhood, you've got the effect of the child on their environment, because a highly emotional kid can really wreak havoc with a family. And you've got the effect of the family on the kid, because a dysfunctional or a family who just doesn't know what to do with a highly emotional kid can have a really negative impact on the kid. And so it's really a transaction.
So
between the child and the environment.
So it's emotional hyperreactivity, invalidation of these emotions, or the family not knowing how to cope with these emotions,
right.
And maybe or usually some trauma?
Often some trauma, not around 50% of the time.
About 50%.
You don't want to think that all kids have trauma, but 50 to 70%, somewhere in there, are going to have it. And I mean, there are a lot of different kinds of families that can't cope with an emotional child. You've got your out-of-control family, the family where the family itself is out of control, your drug-addicted family, your broken-up family where the parents can't regulate, where the parents have too many demands on them and they can't handle this child because they've got, you know, 12 jobs and 12 kids and don't have time to really do anything special for this one child. So you've got that kind of family. You've got the we don't have any problems sort of family where no child is attended to because no one has problems. If you're going to cry, you go to your room, smile in the face of adversity. That sort of family can end up with a borderline child. And then just sort of your ordinary family that really has no clue what to do with a child.
Mm-hmm.
Often it could be that one of your children's sick and you don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
But so there are a lot of different kinds of families, but the most important thing to remember is that it's not just the family and it's not just the child. It's the transaction.
Mm-hmm.
And
now,
it's
this
not
is the
just
second...
the family. You know, there's environments that are very important other than families.
Like schools?
Like schools, peers. Your
peers,
the kind of kids you're with, your teachers.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is the second time you've mentioned transactions, and I know that's important. Can you tell the audience why you focus on that concept?
I focus on transaction for two reasons. One is to try to explain to people how a person could end up with borderline personality disorder in such a way that it doesn't blame either the rearing environment or the family or the child, since I don't think blame is appropriate. But also because an emphasis on transaction, once you meet criteria, can also help you really understand why things go wrong now. It can help you understand how you can, especially when you're working with a patient, how the patient can influence their environment so that their environment becomes a problem environment for them, and also how a patient can influence a therapist. Because it's very easy for therapists to think that all the influence in therapy is going from the therapist towards the patient, without recognizing that the patient is also influencing the therapist.
It definitely goes both directions without question.
And so I really pay a lot of attention to that particular phenomena.
So these are transactions, so to speak, that are going, reverberating, recurring, constantly evolving through time.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Now, how did this come to be called borderline personality? What are these people on the borderline of?
Well, the way it got to be called borderline personality disorder is because the very first people who noticed this particular group, which is all the way back in 1932, were psychoanalysts and psychodynamic therapists who noticed that there was a group of people who came into their treatment who looked like they would do really well in their treatment, but in reality didn't do well in their treatment at all. And so the psychoanalysts were trying to figure out who these people were. And historically, we've had this idea, I don't think a current conception of mental disorders, but it used to be the conception that there was a continuum from psychosis to neurosis to being normal. And people who meet criteria for borderline personality disorder were viewed as people who were on that edge, on the border between psychosis and neurosis.
Mm-hmm. And people with this disorder can have brief psychotic episodes. So
That's true.
That
they certainly can.
Would be where they
It's not terribly uncommon.
This is Dr. Hedaya on the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160 and WMET1160.com. We're talking with Dr. Marcia Linehan, Ph.D., a professor of psychology and director of the Behavioral Research and Therapy Clinics at the University of Washington in Seattle. And we're talking about borderline personality disorder, how to understand it, and what can be done to help these people. So, Marcia, why do you think this is more commonly diagnosed in women than in men? And do you think that's accurate, number one? And number two, if so, why is it more common in women than men?
It's definitely diagnosed more commonly in women. Now, part of that is because women come into treatment a lot more than men. And so you get a lot more women in treatment who then meet criteria. It's not 100% clear that it's more women in the universe meet criteria. DBT, you know, the treatment I've developed, has now gotten very popular in the forensic system, and it's a lot of prison systems are using DBT now, and you find that if you go into the prison system, you find a lot of men who meet criteria for borderline personality disorder in the prison. So it's possible that the women who meet criteria are showing up primarily in psychotherapy, and the men who meet criteria mm-hmm. are showing up primarily in prison. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't rule that out. I'm not saying it's true, but I wouldn't rule it out.
Now, do you make a differentiation between borderline personality disorder and borderline personality organization?
No.
Okay. Some people do, but
they do, but they have a completely different point of view.
Okay. Now, let me ask you about this. I read a study, and this several years ago, probably 10, maybe 15 years ago, where they looked at maybe, I think it was 17 to 20 people with diagnosed borderline personality disorder. And when they treated them for the affective disorder, for the depression, about 50% of them no longer filled criteria for that diagnosis after treatment of their depression. It was a small study, but do you think that people are misdiagnosed with borderline personality disorder when they have an underlying affective disorder or maybe either unipolar depression or bipolar affective disorder?
Certainly, I don't think today you would get that misdiagnosis. In our research, I have a lot of different research studies, but in my research study of suicidal women who meet criteria for borderline personality disorder, 97% of them meet criteria for major depression.
And do you often use medication in the treatment?
No, we do not use medication in the treatment, although I'm not against medication, but we don't use it. But and you can meet criteria for bipolar disorder and borderline personality disorder or bipolar disorder and not mm-hmm. borderline personality disorder. You can meet criteria for almost anything and also meet criteria for borderline personality disorder. I'm not familiar with the study that you brought up. And the facts of the matter are if you treat a person for borderline personality disorder where their major problem that they're presenting with is depression, and you give the person long enough, I really would have to read the study, and I can't really comment on a research study I haven't read. I'm suddenly realizing.
This is Dr. Hedaya. You're listening to The Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160. We'll be talking with Dr. Linehan about dialectical behavior therapy when we come back.
Homeowners, if you want to spend less on bills, how about reducing your mortgage payment up to 35%? It's easy with Quicken Loans. Just write down this number, 800-316-5711. Quicken Loans can show you how to cut your mortgage payment up to 35% so you can make your money work harder, like paying off high-interest credit card bills, affording home improvements, or increasing your retirement savings. Just call 800-316-5711. With over 150 exclusive loan products, the mortgage experts at Quicken Loans have something for you. This could be the most valuable call you make all year. Find out how you can cut your monthly mortgage payment up to 35%. Call Quicken Loans now at 800-316-5711, 800-316-5711. Quicken Loans, America's home loan experts, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. Call now, 800-316-5711.
Some look up to the Man of Steel and others follow lines in the web. But I look up to my real life icon, my dad. And calling him anything less than great will be misguided. In his warm arms, I confided all of my fears. And as my time to rear others grows near, I'm reminded that women marry men just like their fathers. And I hope that's true. Anything less, might as well not even bother.
A message from the National Fatherhood Initiative, the Ad Council, and this radio station. Visit fatherhood.org for more information. Have you been a dad today?
If getting life insurance is on your things to do list, now you can get a term life policy in just 10 minutes. 10 minutes to get up to $150,000 of term life insurance if you qualify through Jefferson National Life Insurance Company. Call now for a free quote, 1-866-612-3600. With Jefferson National, there's no medical exam, no long forms, and no agent will visit you. Just complete a short application over the phone. If you qualify, your coverage starts right away. That's instant term life coverage in one simple call. Call Jefferson National at 1-866-612-3600. Getting life insurance has never been easier to cross off your list. Contains limitations. Based in Dallas, Texas, Jefferson National issues term life under form number JNLSEL03 or a state variation. Call Jefferson National now. 1-866-612-3600. That's 1-866-612-3600.
The world of politics, from overseas to your own backyard. The events of the day that affect you. Hi, this is Linda Chavez, and that's just a taste of what you'll get when you tune in to the Linda Chavez program. Weekday afternoons from 4 to 6 on WMET 1160. Intelligent discussions with great guests talking about the news that matters to you. So be sure to join me, Linda Chavez, every weekday afternoon from 4 to 6, right here on WMET 1160.
Let's get back to the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160. Here is your host, Dr. Bob Hedaya.
Welcome back to the Whole Psychiatry Hour at WMET Talk Radio 1160 and WMET1160.com. I'm your host, Bob Hedaya, MD, and we're talking today with Dr. Marcia Linehan about the treatment of people who have been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder and how to treat these people. Dr. Linehan has a very unique approach, which combines both Eastern philosophy with more modern cognitive behavioral therapeutic approaches. Dr. Linehan, before we went to break, we were talking about medication in this group of patients, and you said you really don't use medication with these people. Tell me more about that, because I think the norm is that most people with this disorder are on medication.
That's correct. That most people with this disorder are actually on what could be loosely thought of as polypharmacy, which is they're on more than one medication. And our current studies where we treat, and the thing you have to remember about me is I treat the most severe. So we take the highly suicidal, very high risk, suicidal patients, high risk heroin addicts with borderline personality disorder. And in the suicidal individuals, most come in on two, three, or four, sometimes five, different medications. And it's really important that the listening audience know two things. One, there's a fair amount of evidence that some medications have some effects, positive effects. There's no doubt about it. Very nice, small studies that some medications have some positive benefits. There's no evidence that polypharmacy, putting a lot of them together And one never knows with a lot of medications what the effects are. I mean, it's like a whole new drug that's not been studied. In our research studies, because we're a behavior therapy, cognitive behavior therapy research group, and the evidence that you also have to remember is that all the evidence is cognitive behavior therapy is as effective as any medication. So there's no evidence that medication is going to be better than cognitive behavior therapy.
Are there studies on cognitive behavioral therapy versus medication for borderline personality disorder?
There's one study that's just coming out of Columbia.
Have you seen the results? Not yet.
Those results haven't been published, but it's actually the only study that's been done.
Okay. Let's move on to your therapy, the dialectical behavior therapy. Can you explain in detail, in understandable terms, of course, what you mean by the term dialectic and what your therapy is exactly?
Dialectics, the therapy started out as cognitive behavioral therapy, standard cognitive behavioral therapy, which is really a technology of change. It's sort of if you want to change, behavior therapy is a good bet. And what happened was, and the way dialectics got into it, is when you applied a technology of change to a group of people who had multiple problems across the board, and were exquisitely sensitive to feedback of any sort, you found that only approaching it with change didn't work. In fact, the treatments blew up because the individual both couldn't take all that negative feedback, you need to change, you need to change, you need to change, instructions, and took it as a criticism of who they were, essentially, on the one hand. And on the other hand, you found that if a person had multiple problems, and you were trying to get them to change, you had to be able to focus on one problem. But if you were going to focus on one problem, you had to get the person to somehow accept the other problems until you could work on them. You had to sort of be able to prioritize things. So what happened was I became very clear that I had to find a way to both teach the client how to accept distress, to tolerate terrible distress in one area of their lives while we worked on another. And I also had to find a way to get therapists to be able to tolerate a client who is on the edge of killing themselves half the time while they continue to work with them without rejecting the client or trying to over-control the client, which is what you tend to want to do when you think a client's going to kill themselves. And so I ended up having to go and find what could be thought of as a technology of acceptance to blend or to synthesize or to bring in together with my technology of change. And when I did that, I discovered that you had a polarity. You had, on the one hand, you had to accept, and on the other hand, you had to change. And you had to find a way to synthesize these opposites. And that's what dialectics is. Dialectics is trying to find the inherent truth in two opposite sides, such that you can move towards a synthesis of the two. And as soon as you get to a synthesis, you often find another polarity or another opposite, and then you try to find that synthesis. And so it's sort of an evolution over time of looking for the inherent truth in opposites to bring them together.
Mm-hmm.
And the treatment got called dialectical behavior therapy.
Mm-hmm. It's because a union of the opposites.
Hmm? It's a union of the opposites,
mm-hmm.
exactly,
mm-hmm.
without losing the identity of either.
Mm-hmm. So that's really a primary concept for the therapist themselves and a concept that the client themselves has to learn how to hold.
Yes, both have to hold it. And that in itself is itself a dialectic of the inherent polarity you often have between your client and your therapist, with the therapist saying change, 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 and the client saying accept me, accept me, accept me on the one hand, or the client saying I want to die, I want to die, I want to die, and the therapist having to accept that.
Mm-hmm.
So both have to do it. There's a transaction between the two people that both have to accept each other and themselves.
So let's take a dialogue. Patient says, I want to die, I want to die. Therapist should respond how?
Why? Of course, you have to find out why they want to die.
I want to die miserable.
They usually
I see
have
no hope.
Pretty good reasons
yeah.
for it.
Yeah, they're trapped. They're unhappy. They're isolated. They see no hope. And they can't tolerate it any longer. The suffering is too great. What should the therapist say?
Oh, you know, you can't say right away what should a therapist say because every situation is different. I mm-hmm. might ask them, why not? I mean, why not kill yourself? Mm-hmm. I could easily ask a person, why not? Mm-hmm. Because you want to inherently find out why aren't you killing yourself? Mm-hmm. And then try to build on that.
Mm-hmm. So you try and get out of the reactive position, really.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is Dr. Hedaya on the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160 and WMET1160.com. We're talking with Dr. Marcia Linehan, Ph.D., about borderline personality disorder and how to understand it and what kind of treatment a person can get. Dr. Linehan, Marcia, can you tell us what a typical course of treatment might be? In other words...
I want to go back to the suicide thing for a moment.
Oh, okay.
Because I really want to make an important comment here, which is the single most important thing a therapist is going to communicate to a patient, is that generally people who want to kill themselves have reasons.
Mm-hmm.
That their lives, for whatever reason, and with borderline personality disorder, it's usually reasonably obvious why it's the case, their lives, from their point of view, are not worth living.
Mm-hmm.
And the real goal of therapy is not necessarily it's not a suicide prevention program. It's got to be a program that really focuses in how can we build a life that is worth living,
mm-hmm.
a livable life. So it's the creation with the patient of a life that they will want to live. That has to be the focus of the treatment.
Well, that, of course, makes sense. Let me get back to the course of treatment for a person
right.
with DBT. What, if you could, in general, outline the phases of therapy and the duration of therapy. I know there's a broad range here, but what could someone expect if they were planning to engage in DBT?
They're planning to engage in DBT. It all depends on what the level of disorder is. So let's say that you're at the worst level of disorder, which is you're out of control.
Mm-hmm.
You're either highly suicidal, you're going in and out of hospitals, in and out of the emergency room, you're a heroin addict, you're a drug addict, or you're bulimic and vomiting and binging and purging 20 times a day. So DBT at that level, which is where almost all the research is, not all of it, but a lot of it, out of control, you would come into a treatment. Generally, you're going to make an agreement with the therapist for a specific period of time. In our research studies, we've looked at some six-month treatments for people a little better in control. But for the completely out-of-control person, generally, it's going to be a year. You'll come in and you'll see a therapist once a week for an individual session. You'll see, be in a group for skills training, which is a psychoeducation group. It's really like going to a class at a university, except you're learning new behavior instead of new knowledge. You're learning new behaviors, and you go to that once a week, generally 2.5 hours a week. You'll be able to call your therapist. You'll be calling your therapist, your individual therapist, for coaching.
I'm going to interrupt. We're going to have to go to break. When we come back, we're going to learn more about DBT. You're listening to the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160 and WMET1160.com. We're talking with Dr. Marcia Linehan about the treatment of borderline personality disorder.
Attention men and women suffering from hair loss. Now, with Avacor, a world leader in hair regrowth, you don't have to be bald, even if you have a family history of hair loss. Here's Dr. Mark Goodman, board-certified dermatologist.
The main reason for thinning hair and baldness is hereditary hair loss. Just because there is a family history of hair loss doesn't mean you have to suffer. Avacor is specially formulated to reverse hereditary hair loss and regrow new healthy hair. Our formula targets the hair follicle to effectively stop hair loss and stimulate new hair growth. Before you consider expensive transplant surgery, remember, Avacor is FDA approved to regrow new healthy hair for men and women.
We're giving away a free month of Avacor with all of today's orders. Call 800-449-8917. That's 800-449-8917. Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back.
Call 800-449-8917. That's 800-449-8917.
Come on now, you have to be tired of it. How it looks and feels, red, scaly, itchy skin. I'm talking about the pain and embarrassment of psoriasis, eczema, seborrheic dermatitis, even stubborn dandruff. Take a look in the mirror. If you want to change your life, you need to call Acadia Skincare today. Acadia's revolutionary skincare products will help restore your skin to a normal, healthy appearance in less than 10 days. You'll even see and feel a dramatic difference in 24 hours. Acadia's topical active ingredients are effective, safe, non-greasy, and FDA-approved. Best of all, they work. You can't buy a more effective over-the-counter treatment. Acadia even has a risk-free trial offer. You have nothing to lose but your problem skin. So don't let psoriasis, eczema, or seborrheic dermatitis slow you down. Forget about all those products that you tried. That was in the past. This is now.
You need to call Acadia Skincare today at 1-800-870-9643. You owe it to yourself. That's 1-800-870-9643. Don't suffer any longer. Call now. 1-800-870-9643.
AM 1160 WMET presents George Washington University men's basketball. The defending Atlantic 10 Conference champions are back for another exciting season. The Colonials are in their fifth year on WMET, which is the same time Carl Hobbs has been coaching at Foggy Bottom. Experience and talent will be a major part of this year's team. A senior front line returns led by NBA prospect Pop Spenzavansu. The 6'9 London native will be counted on to make spectacular plays, including his trademark dunk. Mike Hall brings a steady hand to the Colonials. The 6'8 forward from Chicago has led the team in rebounding three straight years. Philadelphia's Omar Williams is the other senior forward and brings versatility to the offense. The backcourt will be a pair of juniors, Carl Elliott and J.R. Pinnock, who will go by his real first name, Danilo. Pinnock was the best sixth man in the A-10 last season. Excitement is high. The expectations are even higher. Listen to George Washington University men's basketball all season long on AM 1160 WMET.
Welcome back to the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160. Here again is your host, Dr. Bob Hedaya.
Welcome back to the Whole Psychiatry Hour at WMET 1160. I'm your host, Bob Hedaya, MD. I want to remind you that you can reach me at wholepsych.com. That's W-H-O-L-E, P as in Peter, SYCH.com. And remember, you can listen to this discussion again or any of our previous shows on my website, where I have the shows permanently archived, or on WMET1160.com, where the shows are archived for several weeks. Remember, the goal of the Whole Psychiatry Hour here on WMET 1160 is to open your mind to new ways of looking at mental health problems. Today, we're talking about borderline personality disorder with Marcia Linehan, professor of psychology and director of the Behavioral Research and Therapy Clinics at the University of Washington in Seattle. Marcia, you were talking before the break about the structure of the therapy. Can you continue with that?
Okay. So, the patient is in individual therapy, they're in group, and they can call their therapist for coaching. Meanwhile, their therapist is also in a group with other DBT therapists, and the job of that group is to make sure that the therapist stays on track and doesn't deviate from the therapy and continues to provide good therapy.
That's great.
So that group treats the therapist, and it's a therapy group for the therapist.
That is great. That is great. I think that's probably critical.
I actually think if you look 100 years in the future back at any of my work, it's probably my greatest contribution.
Well, that's so unique, really.
Yes, it is unique.
That's unique because the therapists in the traditional model are working with patients with borderline personality disorder become overwhelmed and they don't function very well.
Often they don't. So this is absolutely true.
That's great. How long have you been doing that?
That has been in the treatment from the beginning, so for 25 years.
Okay, and the therapists probably like it a lot.
Therapists really like it because they feel they don't get burned out. They get they have a team of their own. It's like their own therapy group, and they can work on their own issues that come up in treatment. It's very difficult to treat a patient who, one, is either always getting ready to kill themselves, or on the other hand, where progress is slow.
Mm-hmm.
You tend to start wanting to control the person or to do ineffective behaviors. And often the patient wants you to do things that you know in your heart are not therapeutic.
Mm-hmm.
Hard so not to do those things.
And what is this a lifelong type of therapy, or does it kind of taper out with booster sessions? Does it last 5 years or 3 years or 10 years? What could you say about duration?
This is our experience. Now, there are definite exceptions. Okay, so it largely depends on how completely traumatic your childhood was, okay? But assuming that it was only normally traumatic for a borderline, in other words, there could have been some trauma, but it, just every single thing about it wasn't a disaster. Many of our people are in therapy for 1 year. Most, about three-fourths, will get in control. They then may not be in the group anymore. They may go into an advanced group skills training, which is sort of a coaching group, or you go into, once your behavior's under control, many people go into what is called the stage of quiet desperation.
Mm-hmm.
And the stage of quiet desperation is when you're keeping it together, but you're miserable. And then you may have therapy, individual therapy, either weekly or every other week, where the real emphasis is, instead of getting in control, the emphasis is being able to experience yourself and your emotions without having to run away, block off, shut off, distract, or do something else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's where it's learning more that calm regulation. Often people take a break between stage one and stage two, so you're in control. All of our research patients take a break for at least 4 months before they can come back into therapy. Many of them do come back in, possibly for longer. And then what you find is a group of people who are going to often be taking breaks from therapy might come back in for episodic issues or problems. And some of these individuals are going to be in off and on therapy throughout their lives. Many are not. Almost everyone we've treated in our clinic has ultimately been out of therapy, you know, and doing fine.
And they get out of that stage of quiet desperation?
They get out of the stage of quiet desperation, and they go into what's called the stage of ordinary problems in living.
Mm-hmm.
And they sometimes come back for 10 sessions, sort of like an ordinary person, for help with XYZ, whatever's coming up. Sometimes, if you don't get out of the stage of quiet desperation, many of these patients will fall back into being out of control. And so you really have to attend to the stage of quiet desperation sooner or later. You don't have to do it immediately, but you've got to do it.
Mm-hmm. And this is Dr. Hedaya on the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160 and WMET1160.com. We're talking with Dr. Marcia Linehan, a professor of psychology and director of the Behavioral Research and Therapy Clinics at the University of Washington in Seattle, and we're talking about borderline personality disorder and the treatment. Marcia, what about the skills training? How does that work?
The skills training has four sets of skills. There are two different kinds of acceptance skills and two different kinds of change skills. So I'll tell you about the change skills first. There are two kinds of change. One is called emotion regulation, and it's a series of 9 classes on how to regulate emotions. And it's just very basic skills on regulating across the board. We go through about 10 different emotions and how to regulate. The second class is interpersonal effectiveness, and the interpersonal effectiveness is skills in how to get what you need or how to refuse what you don't want effectively, how to maintain a relationship, and how to maintain self-respect while you're doing everything else, self-respect being a really critical area. So those are the two change skills. The two acceptance skills, one set is called distress tolerance. That's divided into two sections. One is called crisis survival. Crisis survival really is how to get through a crisis without making anything worse. It's sort of how to survive one without mm-hmm. making it worse.
Mm-hmm.
And the second part is called reality acceptance. It's radical acceptance, willingness, and how to get through a life that is not the life you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you radically accept a tragic childhood? How do you radically accept marry the wrong person, or you'll never have the job you want, or you're in prison for a crime you didn't commit?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's those skills. And then finally, the other set is called mindfulness skills, and the mindfulness skills are central core to everything else. And so the mindfulness skills are taught for 2 weeks before every other set. So we do mindfulness, emotion regulation, mindfulness, interpersonal effectiveness, mindfulness, distress tolerance, and they're woven into every skill. So the core and the central basic set of skills is the skills of being able to live in the moment, in the present, non-judgmentally.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is first of all, these skills seem critical and wonderful and useful for everybody. It seems like a lot of work, and I think of a patient with borderline personality disorder being in crisis and having a lot of difficulty. And so I'm wondering about the level of motivation required to engage in this and to actually practice these skills and to learn these skills. What percentage of people can do this?
Oh, everybody can do it. They come into the program. To get in the program, they have to agree to be in everything.
Mm-hmm.
But we have almost never, I can't even remember a person that I've had come in who didn't agree. Then once the person gets in, of course, they lose their motivation maybe 20 minutes later.
About 20.
But that's the responsibility of their individual therapist. Their individual therapist's job is to figure out a way to treat the fact that the person can't practice the skills. If they could practice the skills and were highly motivated all the time to do it, then they wouldn't even need this therapy. You could put them in some other therapy. That is the whole problem.
Right, exactly.
The problem is the individual in the therapy is so overwhelmed most of the time, or so emotional, or so mood-dependent, that they can't get themselves to do anything.
We have just a little bit of time left. I want to ask you, do the relationships that borderline personality patients have, do they change with the therapy? Do they find often that they are stuck in a marriage or a bad job? How often do they come to that awareness?
Oh, you know, their relationships will improve because your relationships always improve if you improve.
Mm-hmm.
And many of these people are not in bad relationships. The drug addicts tend to be in problematic relationships because they're often involved with other drug addicts.
Let me interrupt and ask you, because we're close to the end here, how can people contact you or learn more about DBT?
They can do two things. To contact me, they should put my name into Google, it'll bring up all my websites.
Marsha, L-I-N-E-H-A-N.
Yes, and okay. Marsha is Marsha, M-A-R-S-H-A.
Okay, great.
And to find out about DBT, they should put the following website in, behavioraltech.org, behavioraltech.org.
Great.
And
thank you.
And it's got resources.
Thanks so much for being with us, Marsha. We're going to have to wrap up now. That's it for today's Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160 AM. Remember, you can contact me at wholepsych.com. Next week, we're going to have Dr. Kott on the show about talking to us about the use of fish oils in mental health. This is Dr. Robert Hedaya on the Whole Psychiatry Hour. Looking forward to being with you next week on WMET 1160.
Medical advice, opinions, and the references cited are for information only and are not intended to diagnose or prescribe. For your specific diagnosis and treatment, consult your personal doctor or healthcare provider.